All right, we're here with County Supervisor Jim Desmond. I'm Miles Himmel, Communications Director for District 5, and we've got a special guest here today, Dr. Kelly Victory. Kelly, first of all, we were saying how cool your name is to say, but thanks for coming on and talking about COVID. Let me kind of start here. What's the latest you're seeing nationally, locally, everywhere?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me and taking the time to sort of get this information out there. Obviously, COVID-19 has absorbed the news cycle 24/7 now for months, and it has been a moving target. Before I say anything else, I will put it on the record that I have never claimed that the virus wasn't real, that it's not very serious, that it can't cause potential significant illness and obviously death. The good news is we know the people who are really at risk for that, and it isn't everyone. And that's one of the issues, is that we know who the risk categories are and how to protect those people. So the problem in my estimation has been that we have applied with a very broad brush the responses rather than tailoring them to that specific or those specific risk categories. Now, the numbers, when it comes to this virus, the numbers have been very deceiving. The virus is real, the statistics are not. And here's why I say that. Let's start just with the number you hear most commonly reported. In fact, you know, people are getting bashed over the head with it on a not only day-to-day, but an hour-to-hour basis, is the number of cases. Cases are escalating. We've seen a huge uptick in cases. Well, let's talk about what those numbers mean. The case number right now is a compilation of a number of things. It's people who have tested positive, had the nasal swab, and have had a test come back positive. But if an individual is tested multiple times, as is very commonly the case, most people, if they have a positive test, cannot return to work or don't feel comfortable returning until they have another test that comes back negative. So many people are tested multiple times. Each time an individual is tested, that's recorded as a positive, which means that you, Jim Desmond, you could be tested 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and you count as 3, 4, 5, or 6 cases, which is patently absurd. You're one person. How can you be more than one case of COVID-19? Then they are adding in now the positives that come back from antibody tests. Positive antibodies are being lumped into the number of cases. Well, sometimes that's the same person. You first got tested positive for COVID-19, and then weeks or months later, you went and got an antibody test. Many people never got tested for it. They just went to get the antibody test, and it came back positive. What does that mean? Well, unfortunately, the antibody test is not so specific for COVID-19. We have lots of false, what we call false positives. People who test positive on the antibody test, but that's picking up previous coronaviruses they've had. It's important for people to know coronaviruses are very, very common. Upwards of 22-25% of all common colds are caused by coronaviruses. So on the antibody test, it doesn't necessarily mean COVID-19. Then to complicate matters worse, many, many places are now adding in presumed positives. This is happening in Texas, for example, Florida. We're seeing states that are saying, so now the number of cases is really, in my estimation, relatively meaningless or irrelevant, and we should stop focusing on that. And I think it's really scaring people unnecessarily, because an uptick in cases doesn't matter if it doesn't correspond to an uptick in serious illness or hospitalizations.
Well, doctor, I think in your other video, you gave us your credentials, which I thought were very impressive. So can you just kind of give us your background and credentials, please?
Absolutely. I'm a trauma and emergency physician by training. I did my residency in emergency medicine. I got boarded in that, became a fellow of the American College of Emergency Physicians. And I practiced as a hospital-based trauma and emergency physician for many, many years. Then I took a little detour and I went more down the public health route. And I ran a large company that oversaw healthcare for hundreds of thousands of employees. So big companies like Continental Airlines, Harrah's Casinos, Nissan Automotive, many, many federal agencies, including NASA, Patent and Trade. And in that role, which I did for many, many years, I, in addition to managing day-to-day health and wellness for their employees and their families, a huge part of that was looking at and helping people train and plan for the worst ever cases, be it a fire, a bombing, a flood, a hurricane, a pandemic. And how would we respond? How would we keep business going? How would we treat the employees and their families and meet the needs of the community in those resources? So for example, I spent many, many weeks down in Gulfport after Hurricane Katrina on behalf of Harrah's Casinos because they have a huge footprint down there. And so I spent weeks and weeks and weeks in a MASH unit on the front lines. And I learned a lot along the way. I was in that position, in that leadership role at Continental Airlines during the SARS epidemic in 2003. And so learned a lot about how do we respond? Who should we keep home? What should we shut down? What do we keep open? And I have a big background in public health. I've done postgraduate training and coursework up at the Harvard School of Public Health and was for many years on the Leadership Council at the Harvard School of Public Health. Yeah. The important thing about public health that people need to understand is it's when we as physicians or clinicians are supposed to step back and look not just at what is good for an individual, the way that we do in our private practices when we're interacting one-on-one with a person, but public health is required to take into consideration the impact of any decision, of any mandate, of any guideline, the impact on everyone, not just an individual. So when we hear, or when I hear people or public health people saying things like, well, if we can just save one life, unfortunately and tragically, that is not the goal of public health. It can't be. We cannot create and craft guidelines and mandates and public policy that impacts tens of thousands or millions of people, simply taking into account how it impacts an individual. We have to look at the impact on the public health in general. And when it comes to health, it means not just physical health, it's economic health, psychological health, social health, all of those things come into play. So we need to do our best to weigh how can we protect the most people and tailor our decisions and our policy making to take both the individual into account, but as importantly, the public at large.
Well, you know, you mentioned the, well, thank you very much for that. You mentioned the cases, the number of cases, because it kind of at the beginning of this, we were chasing the number of deaths, and then we were chasing the data on the number of hospitalizations, and now it's the number of cases. And I don't know, and I'm not a doctor, and I'm just kind of look. I'm a numbers person. And it seems to me, you know, we're doing a lot more testing, and we're getting a lot more positives back now. And, you know, I've been kind of equating that as, well, we're testing the herd. And I don't, is that a good thing that we're getting these positive? Because we're not finding out whether or not these people are symptomatic or not. Maybe they just have the virus and they're testing positive, but they're not really symptomatic. And our average age for testing positive now in San Diego County, it was in the 60s and age group of between the 60s and 70s. Last week it was age 39 was the average. So is this a good thing that we're seeing these more positives and it's in a younger age group? I don't know, can you talk to that? Sure.
Great questions. You are precisely right. Early on, we were not testing very many people because we didn't have the testing equipment. So the only people who were being tested were not only people having symptoms, but people having symptoms who fell into the high risk category, which I'll get on the record, meaning people over the age of 65 and who had underlying comorbidities, those things like diabetes, heart disease, obesity, underlying respiratory illnesses. So the only people being tested back in February, March, and even early April were people who had symptoms and were in the risk category. And people were, you know, pounding the pavement and pounding the drum saying, we need more testing equipment, more tests, more tests, more tests. So the government responded. We got more tests. Now we have enough for everybody to be tested. So we've gone to the other extreme. We're not only testing people with symptoms, we're testing massively, tens of thousands of people a day, upwards of 100,000 now a day are being tested, the vast majority of whom have no symptoms whatsoever. Okay, so we're testing a bunch of asymptomatic people. We have never in the history of public health done that. Since when? We don't randomly test people for influenza or Ebola or norovirus or Coxsackie virus or herpes or any other virus. I've never seen this happen. We don't test people for tuberculosis or randomly. We wait for people to have symptoms. But with COVID-19, we are testing tremendously. And the vast majority do not have any symptoms, let alone symptoms that are severe enough that they even would have been gotten a hold of a test back in February, March, and April. So number one, you're correct. It's a massive increase in testing. And number two, there's this issue of people being tested multiple times. Is it good that we're doing that? Well, it's only good if you can put the numbers in perspective. And the numbers that we are not putting in perspective because we aren't connecting them to whether or not people are actually ill with this disease or not. We know, for example, there was some mass testing in homeless shelters early on, back it was probably late March, early April, showing that, oh my gosh, you know, 40% of people in homeless shelters are positive. Well, they weren't sick. They were just positive. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean anything to me unless the people are ill and unless there's significant pressure on the healthcare system, in addition to the fact that unless there's additional deaths and human suffering as a result of it. So being positive in the number of cases itself is not, in my estimation, the number that we should be focusing on.
Well, but now some of those cases, well, some of the reactions to the across the country, particularly here in California as well, are shutting down businesses. And tracking outbreaks, which of only three people in a business or a site test positive over a period of time, it's all of a sudden an outbreak. And I just want to briefly just say in San Diego County, you know, we're averaging about 6% of positive tests. So in my mind, you got a 94% chance of not having the virus. And then it's even a smaller percentage you'd be hospitalized. And even though there's deaths, which are unfortunate, there's even a much, much smaller chance of you dying from COVID, even if you have it. But the closures of businesses, you know, and we're expecting actually in just a few minutes our governor to get on and make a news have a news conference, and we're unfortunately anticipating him to shut down barbershops and salons and things like that. We hope not. But so by shutting down these businesses and seesawing back and forth, what's your opinion on, I guess, the overall health of the community, you know, by doing those businesses where we haven't even had any spikes in these businesses, but we're still here, they're on the chopping block?
Well, those are the most important questions that you're asking right now, because what I would ask Governor Newsom is, what is your end game? What is your intention with shutting something down? And people would say, well, to stop the spread. I say, why? Why are you trying to stop the spread of something for which 85% of people have no symptoms at all, or at most very mild symptoms? Why? Initially, it was to, as you'll recall, flatten the curve. Everybody, we were going to flatten the curve. And in the initial days, and I will give that to them, in the very, very early days, and I mean really first 7 to 10 days of this outbreak, back the very end of January, you have to be concerned, whoa, is there something coming down the pike that we need to be girded for in case there's an onslaught on the hospital or the healthcare system? Very quickly, we saw that that wasn't going to be the case. So why are you trying to stem the tide of this? Because I will tell you, as somebody who's looked and studied these things over the years, going all the way back to 1918, to the Spanish flu epidemic, the curve of a pandemic will always flatten. That's the natural trajectory. People who are at the highest risk succumb early, it peaks, there are a lot of deaths, and then the curve flattens, always. independent of anything that we do, independent of wearing masks and this social distancing idea and closing businesses and closing schools and making children stay out of summer camp. All of this really has almost no impact, if any impact at all. So my question to our leadership is, why are you closing these things? What are you trying to stop from happening? What's your end game? Okay, because it doesn't make sense. And then when we talk about people will report to you, yes, but there's an uptick in hospitalizations. And I would say the very important question is, who's being hospitalized? Because I speak on a weekly basis to hundreds of physicians. We meet via video twice a week with hundreds of physicians, not only around the country, but around the world. And I know from what they are saying, there's an uptick in hospitalizations and even in some ICU admissions, but they're not COVID-19 patients. They're what we call COVID lateral damage. They are people who tragically did not go and avail themselves of healthcare when they should have for diabetes, heart disease, asthma, cancer, and then showed up very, very ill. They are showing up way beyond, and people are saying, oh my gosh, why didn't you come in 3 weeks ago? And what we're hearing tragically is because I was scared, because I didn't want to get COVID-19, because I didn't want to put pressure on the system. So I stayed home. We're finding people who had a heart attack 2 weeks ago coming in now. And they said, I stayed home with my chest pain. Wow. And so I'm not saying that all of the hospitalizations are that, but if you listen to, it was a very good letter written by the CEOs of the Cleveland Clinic and the Mayo Clinic to pretty well-known, huge, and very high-quality healthcare systems in this country, Cleveland Clinic and Mayo Clinic. Their CEOs wrote a letter to the New York Times on June 9th saying that they anticipated the deaths from the response to COVID were going to far exceed the deaths from COVID-19 itself.
Wow, that's a very good point, because a lot of people don't want to go anywhere near a hospital if they don't have to, you know, unless they're really, really sick, and then you're right, then they're going into these ICU beds and things like that. We've seen an uptick of about 100 to 150 more hospitalizations in San Diego County in the last month, where we were about 350, and now we're pushing up against, you know, maybe 500. But to me, in a population of 3.3 million, that is a very, very, very small kind of 1% of, you know, it's just a very minute. And it does seem, you know, and people are hanging on to, well, there's more hospitalizations, so we should be scared, or, you know, we should all hunker down. But okay, can you address kids going back to school? Because that's coming up here on the horizon as far as, you know, kids going back. Is that a good thing, a bad thing? What should we do, you know, protect our kids and make sure they get the education they need?
I think not only is it a good thing, I think it's critical. And I think it was a tragedy that the schools were ever closed. Here's what we know about COVID-19. We know that children, and when I say, I use that meaning up to 18, that people under the age of 18 have an extraordinarily low, almost really approaching 0% chance of becoming significantly ill from COVID-19. We've had a handful, even the CDC itself, it's been a couple weeks since I've checked their numbers, but as of a couple weeks ago, the CDC was only looking at a total of 28 deaths under the age of 18 in the country, and they aren't even attributing them to COVID-19. They're saying where COVID-19 was, quote, involved, and they're still looking at them, meaning these are kids who are profoundly ill with other things, cancer treatment or diabetes or whatever else. So again, these are tragic. I can't even imagine being a parent who lost a child at all and worrying that it was related to COVID. But when you talk about children in general, open schools.
Can they be carriers though? Because then they say, well, okay, if the kid sees grandma and grandpa and infects them, that seems to be the main pushback.
Great question. You're exactly right. That's what people repeat over and over and over again, when we know that that is in fact not the case. Children are very, very unlikely to be vectors, be a transmitter of the virus. And here's why. Number one, kids seem to be able to fight off this virus without a hitch, even before they develop antibodies. Many of these kids aren't even developing antibodies because they have such strong T cell, or what we call natural killer cells, in their body that fight off the infection before it even takes hold. When kids do get it in their noses and throats, they carry about 25%, about a quarter of the amount of the what we call viral load that you or I do as an adult. So they just don't have that much virus there, and therefore do not, you know, serve as vectors for this. So we know, and this has been validated by the CDC and the WHO and the New England Journal of Medicine, the New England Journal of Pediatrics, has all put this out there. It just hasn't gotten the kind of attention that it should. Children are not likely at all to become ill with it, let alone die, and they are not significant transmitters of the disease. And the way that we have managed all infectious diseases from the beginning of time is that we identify the people who are at most risk for it, and that changes virus to virus. But for this one, we know who those at-risk people are, and we should rally around to protect those people. You don't, you know, with a broad brush say, you know, these people are at risk, so everybody needs to stay home, everybody needs to wear a mask, everybody needs to socially isolate, you know, those sorts of things. It just defies common sense and logic, and it falls far outside, in my estimation, the guidelines of public health, because it fails to take into account the impact on everyone else. If we wanted to prevent all deaths, we would eliminate motor vehicles, we would eliminate residential swimming pools, we would not allow children to ride bicycles. There are lots of things that we would do if our goal was simply to avoid all deaths, but that's not realistic. And keeping kids home from school makes no sense whatsoever. It's critical for them to go back in person, and I believe with as few restrictions as possible, including masks.
Well, Miles, you want to kind of wrap this up?
That's fantastic. And I think we're on the same page here. Doctor, for people who are reading the headlines, you get the media, what's kind of a final word from you as they see the paper today, they read the headlines, and there's worry, and I understand where they're coming from. What do you say to them?
I would implore people to really try not to focus so much on the numbers that are being reported minute to minute. The analogy I make is that if you've ever driven a boat, you can't constantly be trying to correct path based on a second-to-second, minute-to-minute, day-to-day number, or all you do is zigzag because you're constantly over-correcting. We should be looking at trends. Are our hospitals truly at capacity? Are our hospitals over capacity or being stressed? Are people dying of COVID and not of other things? Try to look and not focus so much on the, oh my gosh, there were X number of thousands or hundreds or however many cases, because those numbers simply aren't meaningful. We need to look at the trend. We need to look at really what the stress is on the system. We need to look at who's being harmed, truly who's being harmed. Who's being harmed more from our response than to the virus itself? Because if we become victims of the response, then we have only ourselves to hold accountable to that. The virus is real, the statistics are not, and our public health response to date really has been, I believe, mismanaged such that it's ended up harming more people than it's helped.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you, doctor. Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you very much for, again, your common sense explanations to these with a clinical background. And you know, we really appreciate, because, you know, like I said, we agree with your message. And I know we're going to get through this. Like, as you had said, curves are going to flatten. That's just kind of things. And we are going to get through this. I think hopefully we'll learn a lot. Maybe, you know, we always learn from our mistakes, unfortunately. But we'll learn a lot and get through this, and really appreciate your insight and you're willing to do this with us. And we appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you reaching out, and I certainly laud your attempts to get your economy and your folks back up and working, kids back to school. It's critically important. I implore people to remain apolitical about this. This isn't a political issue. This No. is really a public health issue, and we need to approach it at that and make sure that we are not harming people and decimating families in the process. So thank you for reaching out. And if there's anything I can do to support your efforts, don't hesitate to call.